Down the brass tacks. Hello? You on the air?
Yeah. I'm new caller.
Yes, well, welcome. Welcome.
Yes, sir. I just come to add my 2 cents about last week, what the conversation pertaining to the changing of the uniform of your beloved alma mater, Ersley School, where they had an incident on one occasion where a young guy lost his couple of his fingers, but Mr. Ellis didn't turn up to say anything. But the change in color, the change in uniform of Mr. Ellis got on very bad pertaining to the changing of the uniform. But I must say, in your time, you wore your uniform with grace and respect for the school and love what it got you. The lady who's that runs the UWA as well, she did that as well, but now is the time of the children. So they went to them and they changed their uniform. They didn't consult the parents nor the elders or the alma mater that went before. They went to the children. So I don't see why it should be a problem. It was 2 pieces of cloth. Now it's only 1 piece. Okay, sir. Do have a good day. Bye for now.
All right. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You on the air?
Good morning, David.
Yeah, morning.
How are you doing, man?
I'm well, and you?
I good. Now, I want to enter my debate on this monkey issue. Let me tell you something. This is true as gospel. Last night, I went to bed. My wife went to bed. At least about 40 pairs in my tree at the front of the house. Then we got it this morning. All the pears gone. You think a monkey picked them? Huh?
It's possible.
I can't really have a bike. Anyhow, let me go a little further. I could give you some knowledge about monkeys. When it was about 9 years old, when I come on this radio, I don't come and just talk. When I was about 9 years old, being a one child at the time, my mother used to send me with a man who used to mind monkeys at Andrew's Plant. People that live around will remember that man. He had one hand, and he had named Martin. He passed on. I came along, and I saw young boys minding blackbirds at the same plantation. What I'm going to tell you now, one of the biggest tests in this country is water coconuts. You ever see a monkey in a water coconut tree?
I don't recall seeing one.
You would never see a monkey in a water coconut tree. And when you hear people talking about monkeys destroy crops, monkeys would not come down in an open field unless his habitat is there that he could retrieve and they're back up in that tree. You know Astrid Good? Yeah, you would know Astrid. Left for they're coming up to Holy Innocent.
Yeah.
You see all of that land out there. That
I get confused sometimes. I hear one pronunciation is Ashford, and I then hear Ashford, so I am not so sure which one it is.
But you know what I mean. You would never see monkeys crossing that open field. And the estate that I grew up in, you would have never seen monkeys inland. Because monkeys thrive around the perimeter of the soil where the plants are being planted. Because
so how would you, with all this knowledge, how would you suggest that we try to tackle the problem?
The fact remains that if you are farming, you got to make sure that there are not a lot of trees around the plot of land that you are planting. Monkey is not a fast animal, you know. That is why they don't travel that distance. You know where you can find plenty of monkeys now being knocked down on the road? That long road going to when you pass Percy King, Western. I think down there is West or Westmoreland. And they're trying to cross from one side of the road to the other where there are trees. But any time that there is a level piece of land and there's no trees around them, you will not find a monkey. And a monkey would only come down and... Look, where I live now is close to the gully. You will not see a monkey come down unless they know when the apple tree having apples, and you will see them coming down. But prior to that, because they're going to stay right above the gully, and they're going to focus, like they got binoculars to see what's right. So all this problem in farming is a two-foot monkey, and I can say this as an advice to those people. You remember the claim in agriculture that a vendor should produce a certificate or a piece of paper to prove that they purchased this commodity, and they will have to show it at the being asked in Detroit. You recall that piece of?
Yes.
Yeah. That is something that should be carried out. I could give you, and this is a fact, I could give you about a joke about a man who used to farm, and he had a shop and had a lot of bananas. He's a living market here. A man by the name of Dollar Jordan. He had his eyes on a vendor, a hawker, you'll call them this, who used to cut his bananas. And he came up with a plan. He took a nail and went up in his land. And when the bananas grew up, he marked DJ in them. When he went the Friday evening, or I think the Wednesday evening, and he saw the bananas gone, the bus boy was right in front of his house. And he saw when the lady catch the bus with this big bag of big basket of bananas. And he followed her, catch the next bus, and went right down where you know she sells. And we had to watch her taking out the bananas and put in her tree. And then he went to her and said, this is my bananas. She said, Mr. Jordan, these are not your bananas. He said, look on that banana. And he said, DJ. We mean a DJ. But I want to say this, that they should have officers traveling around Bridgetown where these vendors are called. A lot of these hawkers buy a lot of stolen goods and put in the tree. And then you find out with these things that you trade, and you ask them for a certificate, and they tell you they're back from so-and-so, take them out. You should have a vehicle to take them and let them carry you to the person that you purchased these things from. And you can see a lot of this stealing going on, and the monkeys will get so much blame. Thank you, David.
Thank you very much. I really wish that some of the people who are really involved in agriculture in a serious way would call and, you know, add to the discussion about some of the more substantial issues that confront agriculture in Barbados. I mean, if we're going to narrow Barbados' agricultural issues down to monkeys and stealing alone, I'm sure that there's a lot more to it than that. I mean, we still have to ask questions about where is the sugar industry in Barbados right now? Where is it going? Where should it go? What are the options available to us? Non-sugar agriculture also matters. Barbados is also a country where water scarcity is coming at us from time to time. We have had the government talk about, or the previous administration talk about 3 desal plants, but desal plants don't address the issue of water for agriculture. So all of these things loom as major issues. We've got a Scotland district that, to a large extent, is underutilized for agricultural production in Barbados. What are we going to do about that? There are a lot of people who want to farm but have no land. I remember many years ago, a previous administration, embarking on a major project in St. Lucie at Spring Hall Land Lease. What has happened with that type of concept over the years? There was land for the landless. That too. I mean, these are the issues. There's another one that I think we need to look at, and that has to do with the fact that there are some people, and there were Guyanese who were here before, prior to the exodus of so many of them, who seem to have had more of an interest in farming than a lot of Barbadians do. Do we need to come up with a program that will allow people from other countries who have that kind of interest to come and assist with the development of Barbados's agriculture? I mean, there's so much more to discuss than just monkeys and stealing. You know, the subsidies that have been given to agriculture in Barbados over the years, a big, big discussion point has to be what has happened with the sugar lands that were taken over by the government. Is the government agency equipped to continue holding on to these lands? I know of one major plantation that was in government hands that has now gone back to private hands. And people believe that, you know, it is showing real progress, reverting to private hands. What is the government going to do with all of these, all of this land at its disposal that to many people it has not been in a position to handle these plantations and this land in the way that they should? We have a lot to talk about. This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, hello. Good morning, Ms. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
I just want, I will start first with the Bajan parlance. The higher the monkey climb, the more you see the tail. Pun intended. Now, I said that to say this. You spoke a lot about bringing balance to things. And I've sat and erased it. And I've listened attentively to this issue about the perennial problem, allegedly, of the monkey. Now, I would say this. The habitat of the monkey has been encroached. They live in gully areas, rainforest areas of Barbados. And someone should receive the initiative to plant bananas, mangoes, or whatever fruits. And then with research, scientifically backed, by biologists or veterinarians or whatever, so that the habitat, which the main habitat of the monkey, Bajan green monkey, will be able to sustain itself with food. Every organism needs some sort of food to sustain itself. Now, also in interest of balance, I went on the internet, and it was YouTube or what, but there's a delicacy around monkey brains. It's a graphic. I can't even watch all. Where a couple of served monkey braids and starts to cut the top of the head of the monkey, the cap of the skull of the monkey off and expose the brains, and you're supposed to dig down. As the person is digging down the monkey brains, blah, 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 the arms jump up and so I can't watch anymore. So that's too graphic. So careful what you wish for. And people are talking about exporting the monkey. I've been in Puerto Rico, to the zoo in Puerto Rico. On display, you have all the orangutans and all these big primates, and so advertised gorilla and so forth. Bajan green monkey was supposed to be on display. It's in some obscure area, probably up by some storeroom or something. And, you know, it was pitiful, you know, and the condition it was in. It was sickening. And I've heard people calling for, oh, export the green monkey. And they have no idea what's going to happen to these creatures. You know, and for the one destruction of these creatures and framing them and talking about that they commit this amount of grand larceny, you know, framing them. I think what's going to happen if Barbados, careful what you wish for, operates before empirical evidence on the green monkey and starts to eradicate it, wildlife, they're going to try Greenpeace and the Rainbow Warrior. The environmentalists are going to hear about Barbados and they're going to come down here because it's nonsense. It's a nonsense. There's a massive amount of perennial larceny going on, and we know it's common knowledge that it's not the monkey that's causing it.
But would you concede,
that
though,
they want to hide behind the Bajan green monkey?
Are you going to concede, though, that the monkey does create part of the problem?
Yes, I say it, but not to the magnitude to which it's being amplified. Someone has hidden agenda or ulterior motives. Right? It's being amplified. You say things loud enough, you're a journalist, long enough, and it becomes propaganda. People believe it. You know? So it needs, in the interest of balance, it needs to be balanced, and the Bajan green monkey must not be framed. Okay? The habitat needs to be reforested, and food or fruits and vegetables, whatever, should be planted in gullies where these primates reside. We came and found the monkey. It's part of our culture. There are a lot of sayings of monkey, clearing ground monkey, for wisdom is in it, infinite wisdom, you know, monkey handling gun and so forth. There's a lot of wisdom from the saying. And I cannot sit here, and I've sat here and listened to this calling for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And there is a movement afoot by these wabba persons with their ulterior motives, and they seem to want to have the total extinction of the green monkey. And as long as I'm living, there's a washing brief is now in effect in regards to the Beijing green monkey.
But so in all fairness, I haven't heard people call for the elimination of the monkey. I've heard people call for the culling of the monkey population in Barbados. And I go back to a piece that was written, I think, in April or so, where a senior official of the Ministry of Agriculture said that the culling of the population wasn't as straightforward as people believe. For some people, it is a major issue. But what we have right now is many people flagging the issue, but very few people saying, well, let's put our heads together to see if we can help find a solution. And some people who think that we are just minimizing the problem miss the fundamental point that we've made this morning, that you need people in the private sector to be more serious about trying to find a solution to the problem. And I don't think it is beyond us to be able to look at it from that perspective. The first order of business is, who else has a problem similar to ours? And how have they been dealing with it? That's the first thing. Your suggestion, for instance, that there is a need to look at the planting of more fruit trees in areas that are populated by the monkeys is something that others have been suggesting as well. But as it stands right now, that it is mere talk. You know, we ain't going any further with that. The only other solution that Barbados is coming up with is to shoot the monkey. And in that context, people are saying, what, $25 for a monkey tail? Bounty hunters are saying that's not enough. What they said? They're calling for an increase in the $15 fee to be paid for shooting monkeys. And they say only a $25 fee per kill will suffice if the venture is to be taken seriously. So could that be the only solution to the monkey issue? I know some of you are interested in this cricket score in the second test between West Indies and Bangladesh. The score that we have, the latest score, is that West Indies are 299 for 5 off 96.5 overs. And that will be in their first innings. 299 for 5, West Indies. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well.
Okay. Where do I start? I got to start with your water. Whereby, on the last occasion, I was explained to you about the situation of how the Water Authority do their billing. If you remember the conversation where you said, what about the other people who steal water? But what I'm coming back to you with this water situation, you just had a caller there who talk about, they tells me you asked them if you think the Water Authority will cut off the water because of the tourists in the hotel. I wouldn't think they would cut it off, but what I think they should do is make sure that they send in circulars due for disconnection like anybody else and enforce it. Not to let them, for years and years, owing them thousands and thousands of dollars. So you see, what is good for the goose is good for the gander. And in Barbados, I find there's too much rigmarole going around. Some people go scotch-free and others pay. The situation with the water, my concern is, why do you have to be constantly paying for a meter? And you say, look at the infrastructure. If you want to use that argument, but then you can look at the infrastructure and many other things. You can start a business and you could do your infrastructure and whatnot, and you could keep charging for it then. You see, I like to be more specific in areas that, if you want to tell me that you're charging me per cubic meter, I could understand that. But I'm talking about no basic need and a normal need and all them kind of foolish things. You're ripping me off. You send me to school, you tell me to learn. Now you've gained an education, you shouldn't challenge things. I got problems with that. excuse me. Would you want to comment on what I said?
No, not at all.
Not at all. I would know that. The situation with the sargassum seaweed, lots of people being going on and saying, oh, the government should go and clean up on this and that, the third and next. Bunch of foolishness. Sargassum seaweed is an act of nature. It was here years, within the last 5 to 7 years, we began the sargassum seaweed. And it comes in, then one day, you drive the coast and you don't see anymore. What is happening at the sea of itself is cleaning itself. It's a cleansing process. So all these foreigners are going picking up seaweed and do this and do that, a waste of time, because it's still going to come. You know?
All right, thank you very much. Somebody wrote here about the problem with the monkeys. And this person says that we should come to their place in St. Thomas, where they have tons of mango trees, pear trees, soursop trees, pawpaw, and the fruit trees, you know. And they say that they can get none, all because of the monkeys. The writer says that the monkeys have become more vindictive, quite sensible, and much more territorial. The monkeys where I live have caused damage to our water heaters because of them jumping and playing on the roof. They say it's ridiculous. They tease and interfere with the dogs, etc. What more am I supposed to endure? Ask this writer. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
I would like to change the subject somewhat.
Sure.
In recent times, I'm realizing, and I believe Barbadians, very often over the last 2-3 years, have been hearing periodically about this savage behavior. And I use the word savage purposely. Behavior on these cruise boats. It has been going on a little while now. It don't seem as though the persons who manage the island or around the island facility, cruise facility, are managing very well, and it seemed to be getting out of hand.
That's an interesting point.
My suggestion, since the security on these vessels are not working, I do believe that it is time enough to enforce that these persons having a permit to do these cruises should at least pay the police force, as though you have a fet, whatever you have to pay for security, pay for at least 4 police officers on that vessel to curtail the behavior in which that I have seen in a video some weeks back. It is time enough.
This was fighting or
the
just
fighting.
Lewdness.
It was literally a fighting where you can.
Oh, I remember that one.
Fella burst a fella head and went on to strike him again with a pint and a half bottle and nobody doing anything. This, you know, if what I saw was correct, it is horrific. Something should be done before it is too late.
But it seems as though
I don't know how late.
The problem isn't just on board.
It is late.
We had an incident.
I don't know what for the late.
What, people having a difficulty hearing me when we speak? It seems that way. Can you hear me?
I am hearing you very clear.
Good.
Very, very clear.
It seems as though the problem is not only on board the vessel. Because if you look at what happened overnight, somebody lost their life. After they went on one of these cruises as well.
Yeah, but David, given from what you would have seen, it sounded to me as though you would have seen one of those videos. Mm-hmm. Given what you would have seen occurring on the cruise, then it obviously means that when you get ashore, it is going to create a further situation.
Yes.
Yeah, you know?
Yes, I share the concern that you have raised about it. It seems to me that we have too many incidents in recent times on board some of these vessels, and there are quite a lot of these facts, huh?
That's
quite a
fact. A
lot of them, huh?
That is a fact.
I suppose it would be fair to say that when you look at the total number of the facts that take place, the incidents may be, you know, small in comparison, but nonetheless, you know, you want to minimize these occurrences where possible. And
I
it is either that they're going to put the police on board, or alternatively, that the operators will be asked to do more when it comes to beefing up security.
Yeah, but David, you know, the security that they would use private would not be respected
the way the police would be. But there's a cost. That means that the price...
It must be a cost.
It means that the price will be added to the clients, huh?
Well, if you cannot behave yourself in an orderly manner, well, then you must pay a bit more for somebody to keep you within the due limit, if that is the case.
Yeah.
But we don't need to have the papers and have the news telling you somebody was shot fatal, somebody was wounded fatal on a cruise, and you're hearing this say, like, every month. I don't think it augurs well for Barbados or the behavior pattern of the people.
Well, it's telling you a lot about how the country has changed as well, you know. You know, there are a lot of these people who have the wherewithal to go on a cruise. I don't even know how much they pay these days. What they also carry with them is a bad behavior. And once you put some alcohol on top of that, you know, things go wild.
This is why I say it. Use the police, because the average security without the clout of the law might be treated in a similar manner, and you don't need that.
Somebody here says that there are people, police officers in plain clothes on board these vessels. So what you may well be saying, or what they may well be saying, that is not enough of a deterrent.
Well, if that is a fact, well, then we would wonder what has to happen. I wouldn't want to make any further suggestions. I would allow people out there who would have heard and are more in a better position to say something about it. I wouldn't want to talk out of turn as far as that is concerned, but I think I have made my point as explicit as I could. I would leave other people to put their 3 cents in. Thank you, Mr.
Somebody says here these cruises are just lawless gatherings, and they should be putting heavy fines on cruise operators who promote this kind of thing in the name of entertainment. What is worse is that the police are taking chances by working these private cruises. So that's another view on it. Down to brass tacks. Hello? Hello? Welcome to the program. Down to brass tacks.
Mr. Ellis, good afternoon, sir.
Good morning. It's 11:34.
I have 2 cents. That's good. You must also tell me the cricket score.
The cricket score I have here is West Indies are 307 for 6. You know that Craig Brathwaite made 110. Hetmyer, he scored 86.
Those were the overnight scores.
Well, the current score is 307 for 6.
Okay. Well, that's good enough for me.
Yes.
I will hear the details on the 5:30 news this evening.
Yes.
Anyway, Mr. Ellis, 2 things I call to discuss to you. And if I'm allowed, I will be happy.
Sure.
The first one is recently you would have heard of this guy that was bunked for Barbados from Miami. I had a python in his luggage.
Yes.
You heard that?
Yes.
I would like to know how he would really get through here with that. And if he get through Barbados with that, it would be because I have been a traveler for many a year and passed through the airports. Albeit I have not passed through this new airport. But when you get a customer, what happens? Sometimes they tell you, have anything to declare? And you say no. Yeah. You say no. And then they might tell you, hold up the corner of your suitcase, let me check. Hold up the corner of your suitcase. You unzip the corner of your suitcase. And the check. They push in the hand. Wait. I was being distracted there a little bit, Mr. Ellis. Yeah, back on target now. They tell you on the corner of your suitcase, they push in the hand, the feel, and then they tell you, zip back up and move. I want to see at the airport, and indeed at the seaport. When you get to customs.
When the man didn't pass through Barbados with it?
No. He was caught at Miami.
He was caught in Miami. So,
but I am talking about Barbados now, Mr. Ellis.
So you are suggesting that this incident shows that Barbados is lax in its approach? Is that what you're saying?
No. But
okay.
Let me make the point, Mr. Ellis.
Mm.
All I am saying is that I want to see more thorough searches at the airport where they tell you open your suitcase and you peel it right back. And if people get trained,
as far as I'm concerned, these people have been trained to do their job. And I think, in all fairness to them, one would expect that they would have a good sense of what they're supposed to do in trying to track the behavior of people coming into the country and people leaving the country. So I don't know that I'm in any position to recommend to them that they got to peel back this and peel back that.
But Ms. Ellis, if you would allow me to make the point, you would understand what you're
trying
to make.
All right, I'm trying to understand. I thought I understood what you were saying.
You can't understand if you don't listen.
Okay.
So I want you to just give me an ear, and then we could have a tete-a-tete if you so wish.
Okay, all right.
All I'm saying is that when you come to the airport at GAA, sometimes you get a customs, the customs will tell you, open your suitcase, and sometimes when you start opening your suitcase, the fellow will tell you, all right, that's enough, and you push your hand in the corner of your suitcase and feeling, and then you tell you, use it back up and go along. I am saying that should be outlawed. When you get to customs at the airport, you should be made to open your whole suitcase and the officer go through your luggage because you don't know what inside that luggage. When you push your hand through a corner suitcase and you feel, we aren't doing nothing. So all I'm saying to you, Mr. Ellis, is that there should be a more thorough search of people's luggage, both in the suitcase and both in barrels and also in barrels and that kind of thing. Because you could imagine a fella coming to Barbados and getting through with that python. You could imagine that. And you don't know if that python.
But you know, you really got me flabbergasted with this discussion.
I usually do, you know.
That particular incident did not occur here. And I do not. Let me make the point. I don't understand how the man being intercepted at Miami International Airport brings us to a discussion about what actually happens in Barbados, and you stretching your imagination as to what might have happened if it was brought here and all of that. Well, I don't understand the link between the two.
But you don't got to understand it because you probably was wearing it for you, so you don't got to understand it.
Well, you see, there you go. There you go.
Let me make another point. What did I say? You're telling the modest boy about cassava sticks and the tell you.
There you go. You must be bringing it for me.
Anyway, let me make my next point, which is also a very serious point. I'm sure that you are.
All of a sudden, this man now is off limits when we're talking about cassava. I mean, give me a break. Facts are facts. Full stop.
Man, Davis, man, sometimes you be a little bit too jovial, you know. When people discuss serious matters with you, you become very humorous, you know. But you gotta take things serious. Anyway, let me make the next point. I have been discussing.
Somebody said you hear that you talking about what happens at the airport suggests that you're in travel for a long time.
Yeah, but
because they're suggesting that you don't know what's going on at the airport.
I have traveled, David. I have gone all over the world traveling.
Yeah, but when's the last time you traveled?
Not recently.
Precisely. That's exactly the point the person is making.
The older I get, the more...
The more you stay home.
No, the older I get, I get scared for airplanes now. But let me go on to my next point, David. Let me go on to my next point. On this calling program, this radio station, I have been calling for them asbestos roofs at the seaport to be changed. And I'm sure that you would have heard me many times on this calling program talking about it. Now, they had, and I can draw three quick instances to you. They got the High Court made the producers of asbestos and the insurance put for $30 billion there for people that has been affected by asbestos with MS. MF. Multiple sclerosis is something else. MF. For people who have lung cancer and all these things because of asbestos. Right? Now, Johnson & Johnson got to pay $4.7 billion to the ladies for powdering up themselves who contracted cancer because of the powder, and they said the powder got in asbestos. A guy in Jamaica heard on the news last week saying that he's going to sue the Mona campus in Jamaica because he got mesothelioma. That's the thing. He has caught mesothelioma as a result of the asbestos roofs in at the campus in Jamaica. He can sue them. And I continue to ask the question, why they can't they do something with the asbestos roof around the port with so much workers and indeed passengers passing through the port? Why can't they do something? And I know why telling you because I've seen it. They got the asbestos roofs down there with the asbestos blowing at the energy roofs like cotton. Some days you go and see a lot there and then you go back, you don't say no more. It blow off and blow all about in the air. When are they going to do something about their roofs in the port? They're going to wait till some people get together and bring a class action suit against them that might cost them millions of dollars too. So all I'm saying is that you need to look at the asbestos in the port because I keep telling people there's 9 roofs in the port with asbestos and they can call all of them. Every single one they can call. So all I'm saying is that they need to do something about it. And I made a suggestion to them where I say they've got a sealant that you can paint it on. And my man, R.R., he even told me about this sealant. You can paint on this sealant and it will hold the asbestos cracks together and all the edges are breaking off until such time as you can do something with the roofs, and that is what they ain't doing. So I want to go with some boys to them.
All right, sir.
Before they do what they got to do.
Thank you very much. This is Dr. Brastocks.
Hello, good.
Good morning.
Yes, David. I want to speak to you on a couple of issues here. Let me start with algae culture and the monkey problem. I believe that there are a number of factors that have the potential to impact algae culture, including the monkeys as well as crop pests, what beetle larceny, what we want to call it. But let me talk about the monkeys. One is driven by the experiences that have. You agree with that?
The experiences that who have?
People are driven by their experiences. And this is a general
yes.
That is used.
Yes.
Okay, so let me speak to you from that position. Monkeys are a serious problem, and they pose a serious threat to our algae culture, present and future, and future tense as well, because they are not only consuming and the products and the produce that you have, they're also destroying. So they're doing it on multiple fronts, and they are multiplying. They have lots of sex, and they're very virile, and they are multiplying. They have no predators, and the only predators they possibly have is human beings. And this, I heard you had a few callers talking. To me, it's nonsense, really, trying to excuse and talking about animal rights organizations coming in. Don't they slaughter pigs and cows and things all over in all these countries that want to come and tell you, but you can't kill monkeys, you shouldn't shoot them. It's a matter of our survival. That's how serious it is. And they are, and I heard you read something there when someone is talking about how fierce they're becoming. They want to take over the place, to trample. They only affect.
So what would you do? You would get rid of all of them, or would you just cull them?
You need to control them. They need to be seriously controlled. That's in terms of natural predators. You know what happens when they're predators. I've seen the.
But we are at a loss in controlling them right now. All we get is exactly what you are saying to us. We need to control them. What can we do?
Let me tell you, shoot them. You need to shoot them. You need to shoot them. You have the defense force there. You need to find a way to get rid of some of them. You cannot continue to allow them to multiply. So the only way to
do you believe that Barbados could embark on a process of shooting monkeys without having a serious backlash from animal rights activists,
David,
and people, David, who are tourists to this country?
David, all these countries are saying that they slaughter animals. Tell me something. Is a cow an animal? Is a lamb an animal? Don't they kill? Don't they slaughter and produce beef in all these countries? Give me a break, man. We have to stand up and get it. If it's a matter of our survival or the monkeys, what are you going to do?
You're saying that you're suggesting to me, because the way that you are couching it, it seems like we are really desperate. And I'm getting some comments here from some other people that seem to make it paint a picture of desperation. You're saying it's a matter of our survival.
That
it's us or them? Is it that bad?
It is that bad, David. You only, if you don't experience it, you don't, if you let me make a suggestion to you. Get some farmers together. I mean that.
But let them call, a lot of them could call this call-in program right now and tell me.
It has to go beyond just the call-in program. I mean, you know, if you just like, you invite people inside your studio to have discussions regarding politics, and that's important and for the, you know, and who's going to lead the country and stuff like that. Okay, so my suggestion is that you need to have a serious conversation. You had the person that wrote in from St. Thomas that talked about how they even affected their water heater. Why don't you find a way to extend an invitation to a person like that? People who are actually experienced the damage that monkeys are caused.
Yeah, but there is damage, but I don't see the evidence to tell that.
I don't see the
evidence to support your argument that it is about our survival.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you agree that we have to address our food security issue that people are
but not just
about?
Through monkeys. There are so many other aspects of food security.
David, in my initial comments, I said that we have to take a multi-pronged approach.
We agree that the monkeys are creating a problem for people in agriculture and otherwise. But the only part of this that I disagree with is the way that you are projecting this as a matter of Barbados's survival.
We cannot survive without food, David. Listen, on the chain of life, it's oxygen, water, and food. Those are the three chains that survive. Minutes with on oxygen, on water, David.
So let me ask you this question. If it is as bad as that, where would you rank the monkey problem versus the Predia larceny problem?
It's difficult for me to speak to you regarding that because, as I said earlier, you have the experience. I haven't really experienced any problems with Predia larceny. So I'm in no position to speak to that. I'll let others who would have experienced that to speak to you about it. I would only be speculating. This is too serious a discussion we're having for me to speculate, okay? But I suspect based on what I've seen and reading that's also a problem. And as a matter of fact, that's easier to address than the monkey one. And it seems to me that people, you can take action to address that by way of laws, not only laws, but enforcing the laws that you implement. But let me pull you in relation to how serious it is a threat to us and our actual survival in the future. Because if we are going to expand our food security in terms of bringing arable land back into cultivation and stuff like that, we are going to start introducing and encouraging people to grow more and produce more. Look at this hypothetically. If you start to do that, and you have crops in production. Imagine for a moment the monkeys come in with and invade these expanded crops that you're producing. You had projections for 5,000. Let me just say in terms of acres, you have 4 acres and 50 acres in production, and the monkey destroys 50% of that. You have a 50% setback in relation to your target for your food security. So if you're moving in that
direction. On a national level, how much of what we are producing is being destroyed by the monkey population? Do you have a sense of that?
My suspicion, based on what I've been hearing, and I can only speak to my experience, my own personal experience. But when I listen to other farmers and farmers speaking to the problem, I can tell you it's a pretty high.
We need stats on that.
Okay, that is attainable, but we don't have to depend on that to take action, huh? Because I'm saying that it is. This is look. I'm willing to look at how we can bring together more information regarding the whole safety problem it is, and I will be willing to rope you in if you're willing to see and come back to the public and talk about the what you've discovered with regards to the seriousness of the problem. How about that?
Okay, fair enough. I'm not here to say to you that we can be dismissive of the concerns that are coming from members of the farming community. But it is the scale of it. And we got to be very careful that we don't blow it out of all proportion, because I come back to the article that I saw written by Jean Ballou not so long ago, who has been tracking the growth of the monkey population. And contrary to what some people are suggesting, I think you are suggesting that the monkey population has been growing significantly. I didn't get that from what he wrote. But whether it's growing or not, there is a problem. And I'm forcing people to say, well, what can we do? How can we bring our collective wisdom to bear on the problem without just saying the government alone has to fix it? Because private farmers are involved, and they must also be able to work together to come up with a solution. This is Down to Brass Tacks.